This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
The Jocks Roundtable, driven by Benchmark Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, is on now.
Are you ready?
Straight up 6 o'clock. Here we go. Super Bowl week. Last night was the opening night, which is media night. We'll talk about that. Auburn's got basketball at a house of horrors for them. We'll get into that, and LSU's got their defensive coordinator. But let's start with the Super Bowl week down there, which has sort of been on a back burner the past couple of days, but will now slide to the forefront where Kansas City and San Francisco do battle this weekend in Miami. And you have so many stars. I appreciate that opening there. We have so many stars in this game. I mean, this is a star-studded lineup on both sides. You got Bosa on defense. You got Richard Sherman on defense. You got the two tight ends. You have all the weapons on at the receiver position. And you got two high-profile quarterbacks. Mahomes obviously being a superstar. This is not a low-rent Super Bowl. These are two star-studded teams.
Yeah, and I think Pat Mahomes is definitely your A-lister, though. And I think the more and more people watch San Francisco, the more they get used to these names like a George Kittle or a Nick Bosa. But you're right, Dunaway. I mean, there is a lot of star power in this Super Bowl, and there's a very familiar coach in Andy Reid. And, you know, I think the closer we get to game time, Super Bowl 54, I think if you haven't chose a side, I think a lot of people will gravitate to the side of the Kansas City Chiefs because they haven't been here in 50 years and because you've got a coach that's been in the game for so long that the one thing that has eluded him is a Super Bowl championship.
I'm really bad at this, so I don't know why I do it, but I was looking at it over the weekend and thinking, I wonder how many Hall of Famers are in this game, because you would think Pat Mahomes is on that fast track, right?
Oh, yeah, he'll be a Hall of Famer.
You would think. Say, yeah. I would say Richard Sherman's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah.
I mean, and he's nearing the end of his career, really. I mean, this is he's what been in the league better part of a decade, if not an entire decade. And as a defensive back, man, that's a long time.
Both tight ends will be last 3 years, they've set a record.
Yeah. I mean, they should be. Yards. I mean, the trajectory they're on right now, Brown, both Kelce and Kittle are playing like Hall of Fame tight ends.
Yeah, all I was going to say is it's hard to judge tight ends because I don't even know the history. I mean, Tony Gonzalez is in.
Dave Casper, I think.
I mean, you know, the tight end history isn't great in the Hall of Fame, but
Shannon Sharp.
We're in the era of the tight end, right?
Yeah. Just remember, these guys have each basically gone 1,000 yards receiving in each of the last 3 years.
So I think those guys are in. You know, there's talk about John Lynch getting in, and now with his front office experience, the whole package, John Lynch might be in.
Andy Reid's definitely a guy.
I mean, you got some Hall of Fame pop in this game.
And still one guy that's improving, and that's the biggest star of them all, Pat Mahomes. Here's Travis Kelce, his tight end, on what he has seen from Mahomes from the first start all the way now to a possible Super Bowl win on Sunday. Here's Travis.
Yeah, no, that's what he came in the league doing. And that's what he feels most comfortable at, is rolling out and being able to find the voids in the defense. From there, I wouldn't even say that's what he does best now, because he's taking his game to another level in the pocket and being aware of knowing where to go with the ball every single play. So I think it's just that's where the game is most comfortable for him. And obviously it shows in his ability to be able to put the ball anywhere on the field, no matter which direction he's going.
A lot of hype for Pat Mahomes coming into this, but ESPN coverage metrics using NFL Next Gen stats. I'm supposed to say that if I use this stat, so I got it legally out there, Brownie. Pat Mahomes against the Chargers this year, who play a defensive style like the 49ers, I think with less talent, he had under 200 yards in each of those games because they were primarily in the zone, which San Francisco loves to do. So is there something about Pat Mahomes' game that makes it work? And he's really the best in the league against the zone, but for some reason against a team that never relinquishes and stays in that zone, he has struggled this year against them to get over that 200 number.
Well, you know, I don't think he's seen a pass rush that he is going to see like San Francisco has on Sunday, and I think that could be the difference. Now, you know, Mahomes' ability to really extend plays, I mean, he is a true athlete at the position. You know, he's not what we see with Lamar Jackson, but in his own right, this is a guy that's, you know, somewhere between Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I could say that. Do you think the whole zone deal with them, I mean, the whole him struggling against the zone, now that you wouldn't think this would affect his pass yardage, but maybe it does, is, you know, he is so good on the run, his scrambling, which is much more difficult against his own than a man-to-man. That's right. It's one reason historically, you know, I'm not trying to make this local, I'm just using a good example. One reason historically Alabama has struggled against mobile quarterbacks is they like to play a lot of man, and you got your back to the quarterback a lot.
That's right. He can escape out the back door and run for uncontested yardage.
So when Mahomes knows that that's hemmed up a little bit, it affects his game. I don't know. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense, though.
Yeah, well, it's you're just forcing the shorter throws.
Yeah.
And that'll be something to watch this weekend. What do they dial up to try to control Mahomes? Is there an excitement level for this game? We're on a Tuesday now, and there's, you know, with what happened with Kobe Bryant over the weekend sort of dulled the senses to a lot of things going on in sports. But even, you know, the week off didn't seem to have the same buildup. Do you feel the momentum starting to build towards Sunday?
You know, I did see some of the tweets on Sunday. You know, I saw a guy say, hey, my team's playing in the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years, and I really just don't care right now. So I think between what we have now with the 2 weeks off, you know, where it takes kind of a dip down, and then the Kobe situation, I think by Thursday, maybe even by tomorrow, we'll start to really get this thing amped up, because I do think it's a tremendous matchup. I mean, you made the point yesterday, Dunaway, this thing is close to a picket as you can get. There is a ton of star power. It's two really, really good teams. So I think by Sunday, we'll be really excited about this game.
Everybody always says, let's get a Super Bowl without the Patriots in it, right? Well, that's what we got. I mean, the Patriots are not in this game, so I'm curious to see if people like it as much. I mean, I don't know that you'll be able to judge by TV numbers. They're massive no matter who's playing in the Super Bowl.
You know, my biggest revelation yesterday from this media day was Andy Reid doesn't like cereal.
That is shocking.
Are
you serious?
It really is, isn't it? Because, you know, I think almost everyone,
universally. He looks like a bacon and sausage guy.
He does, well, but
he
does,
Rockstar. But, I mean, as a kid, you don't think he would have pounded out boxes in boxes of cereal?
No, Rockstar, he looks like a guy that would like cereal as a snack.
Yeah, I don't think this cereal's not filling enough.
No, it's an appetizer.
Yeah.
It's a snack. Yeah. It's the late night snack. Let's see. It's 9 o'clock. I've already eaten dinner. I'm about to go to bed.
Yeah, I almost got me a bowl of cereal last night because I was watching Curb. And he just makes cereal eating so easy.
It looks so good.
And I just wanted to go up to the kitchen and get a bowl of cereal.
As an adult, now not as a kid, but as an adult, I've eaten more cereal at night than I have in the mornings.
Well, I agree. Mine usually comes about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Where I'm looking for that little something to tide me over from what has become such an early lunch for us.
Do you always have to go milk with the cereal?
Oh, yeah.
I do.
There are a few I can eat dry.
I can't buy it because that's one of the things that there was an eating competition. I could devour cereal. I could do a full box in one sitting. Yeah. So if I buy it, I won't stop.
I was going to ask you, how many have you ever finished off a whole box before in one sitting?
Yeah. One sitting?
Yeah.
A box of what?
I could do Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I was on Apple Jacks right now.
Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, you're right. That the cereal doesn't fill you up until much later on.
And it's the game of pouring cereal, getting some milk, and they eat it all. They're like, well, there's a little bit of milk left. I might put some cereal. Well,
I need to add milk. I got too much cereal now. Yeah.
Just over and over. It's a cycle.
Well, apparently Pat Mahomes has got a new cereal out. So Andy Reid was asked about it, and he said, look, cereal's not my thing.
I don't think we need a new cereal. I mean, like, do you really think we could invent a cereal now?
That has a flavor that is so unique?
Yeah, that would compete with.
I've got it.
What?
Sriracha and pimento cheese. Remember that time, Lance
did a potato chips?
Yeah. Lance did a potato chip.
You know what really sucks about that? That was original back in the day. You guys will give me that was a decade ago, and now everybody's got these sriracha chips out.
Yeah, but the sriracha pimento cheese chip would have been great. Now, what would be a good cereal flavor?
I just don't think.
Have you been on the cereal, Honey Nut Cheerio, or Cheerios just has, like, they've got, like, toasted coconut now.
Well, they've done pumpkin spice. They've done a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Anything you can think of.
I just don't think, I think we have exhausted our cereal creativity. You're not going to have anything that's going to compete with the Fruit Loop or the Apple Jack or.
Do we have a caramel sea salt out there?
Oh, I'm sure.
Probably.
You have a honey bun, yes.
Yeah.
They have churros now. Sour Patch Kids cereal. That's not a joke.
Listen, dude. Damien. Mark says he doesn't like cereal. He looks like a character on a cereal box.
Talking about Andy Reid.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah. So did we not have a cereal bracket at one time?
We did. I don't know how it turned out.
The winner was, I know Fruity Pebbles was in the finals.
Captain Crunch went deep, didn't it?
Yeah.
Frosted Flakes went deep.
That's so basic.
Yeah, but it's such a good go-to.
It is.
Let's make that a Cap'n Crunch poll question of some sort. Let's see if we can come up with a flavor. We'll come up with, send us your flavor that you think we're missing in the cereal aisle, and we'll throw that out there. See if we can come up with a new cereal here on the show today. A little light heartiness leading into the Super Bowl. Bo Pelini's the new defensive coordinator at LSU. 2007 with Les Miles led LSU to the national title. Now he's back, leaving Youngstown State as a head coach. He's going to make $2.3 million a year for 3 years, the contract. And as we move away from the headlines now, I ask you this question about Bo Pelini. Do you think he realized that my best chance of being a Power 5 head coach again is to leave an FCS job at Youngstown State and go be a defensive coordinator in the SEC? It's easier for me to get a Power 5 job as a coordinator in the SEC than a head coach at the FCS level.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the last time he was a Power 5 coach, it went from being a defensive coordinator, winning a national championship under Les Miles, to taking that Nebraska job. And since he's been in his hometown of Youngstown, coaching Youngstown State, and in year two, they won a national championship. But since year two, they've been really average, about 5 or 6 wins per year. So if he ever wants to get back and be a head coach at the Power 5 level, this was the route to go.
Are you surprised at the money for Pelini coming in? Because I'm not. We saw Kevin Steele get 2.5. This guy has a national championship on his resume as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, but are you – so I don't even know what type of job Bo Pelini would get. But if you are a fan of – let's go South Carolina, all right?
Okay.
That's in conference, but let's use them anyway. Would you be, if you're a fan, Lance, would you be more excited about hiring the Youngstown State head coach or the LSU defensive coordinator?
LSU DC.
I think so, too. I just think, you know, the FCS guys, I think it gets viewed as, it's not even the same type deal, right? I mean, you're not recruiting the same way. It's not the same level of competition, yada, yada, yada. Maybe that's unfair to the FCS coaches, but I think most fan bases would view it that way. So, yeah, I think Bo Pelini, first of all, they'll make more money. But secondly, if he wants to be a Power 5 or even maybe a Division I head coach again, his best spot was LSU defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and what you learn quickly, unless you're winning a national championship or doing something unique at the FCS level, then you're not going to get that look, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to get a needle to move as a coordinator at a Power 5 program, especially in the SEC with all the TV exposure, than it is to make the needle move at the FCS.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go FCS to Power 5. Like Chris Kleiman did it from North Dakota State, but you think about that now. There was a connection, right?
Right, but with, also multiple national championships.
Well, I was about to say, he was by far and away the most successful guy on that level, by far and away. Yeah. I mean, they were winning it every year.
And for people that know football, Youngstown used to be what North Dakota State became, and it's not anymore. So, you know, you can't be at a what used to be basically the Nebraska of the FCS and no longer you're winning and you're the guy in charge of that program.
You know, what kind of money could you make at Youngstown? 500?
I thought about looking what he made today and I forgot
he had a million. I thought he was making over a million.
Wow, that's a lot for an FCS coach.
Yeah,
sure?
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was making over $1 million at Youngstown.
And the longer Scott Frost takes to get this thing going,
The better
Bo Pelini looks as a head coach.
That's right.
I mean, in hindsight.
So he may get a shot at it again. Yeah. But that gets us to the most burning question in the SEC this year, according to 24/7 Sports, and that is, and I'll read it straight from their headline, was LSU's greatness a one-year wonder? And we've talked about this since that national championship. And as Bo Pelini comes on board and we put a bow on this coaching staff transition with losing Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, your gut feeling right now? Was this a one-year wonder for LSU? How far do they fall back? Are they back contending for Atlanta again next year? What is your gut feeling?
Look, LSU's always had a ton of talent, but to me, this did feel like a moment in time, and it starts with Joe Brady, and then right off of that is Joe Burrow, and both of those guys are done. But I thought it was more schematic, and, you know, the system that was implemented by Joe Brady, it was something we've never seen with LSU's offense before. And now that he's gone, I just don't think Steve Ensminger is going to be able to replicate this. And, again, it's an unknown at the quarterback position. So, to me, with that schedule and with all of these defections, you know, I think it's more 9 wins next year.
So, let's do this with the offense. LSU went from listen to this now, 402 a game in 2018 to 568 a game in 2019. That was their increase. 402 a game, average yards per game, in 2018 to 568 in 2019. So I don't even think it's realistic to think you can keep up the 568. That is such an anomaly based on where you were the year before.
Right.
So tell me where you think it falls. I mean, what is a reasonable expectation for yards per game?
Oh, I think it goes back to 450. I think it's I think it's a drop of 100 yards a game.
Yeah, but 450, is that still number one in the league? Where?
No.
No, not even close.
Alabama was number two this year at 510.
Yeah, but are we expecting, without Tua Tagovailoa and two first-round receivers, for them to drop back? Where's the norm in the SEC, I guess, is what I'm asking.
No, I think
Alabama's offense was above normal last year, above the trend of what is number one every year.
All right, so last year LSU was at 568, Bama was at 510, Ole Miss was at 445. So 450 would have had you number two. I mean, if you just did it this year, you'd have been number two behind Alabama. In 2018, 450 would have had you number six.
Oh, wow.
Behind Alabama, Ole Miss, Missouri, Texas A&M, and Georgia. I'll just go back another one. Yeah, I mean, it just varies. 2017 would have had you fourth behind Missouri, Mississippi, Auburn, and right in front of Alabama. So it just depends. I mean, it depends on the year. But, I mean, if they drop back to 450, there's a lot more pressure on Bo Pelini because that's, I mean, 450 is good, but it's going to have you in some games where you're going to be in a tight ball game, and they weren't in a lot of those this year.
So to answer your big question, though, Dunaway, I truly believe they take steps back. I don't even think it's close this year.
But for how long? I mean, we always expect somebody to take a step back. I mean, if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, the odds say they will not win the Super Bowl again next year. Sometimes you get back-to-back, but we expect LSU not to win the national championship. So how far do they go back, and do they bounce right back the next year or the year after that to be back in contention? How long until they're contenders
again? I just don't think we'll ever see a special year like this again. And I think they'll be contenders because of all the talent that they amass there. But the SEC West is so difficult to navigate. So, you know, not only are they amassing all this talent, everyone else in the SEC West is as well. And I just think the X factor was Joe Brady.
You know what? It's funny. If you tried to peg where the SEC West fell offensively, it's really, really hard. If you try to peg where it's going to fall, because I don't know what to expect out of Auburn. I mean, they've got a quarterback that's another year, but they've got a lot of questions on that offense.
Yeah, if you just had your offensive line back intact, you'd feel really, really good about Auburn.
But that's an offense.
That's such a wild card.
That's an offense that was 406 a game last year. I don't know what to expect out of Ole Miss. I don't know who the starter is going to be. Is it John Rhys Plumlee? How does he play in a Lane Kiffin system?
I would bet not him.
Okay.
Wouldn't you?
I mean, I don't know their entire roster, but John Rhys Plumlee does not seem like a Lane Kiffin quarterback, a guy that's basically running the wing tee. That is not Lane Kiffin's style of football. Mississippi State, I mean, you trust Mike Leach. Is it going to be Garrett Trader? Who's it going to be? Alabama, you know, we don't know what Mac Jones or Bryce Young or Talia Tagovailoa is going to do. And then we were just talking about LSU. I mean, if we tried to peg total offense for these schools, I don't even know how good we could do.
Lunsford is back from New York. I mean, I'm going to see Beetlejuice when I'm in New York in March. You saw that.
I did.
Was it good?
It was pretty good.
Is it as good as the movie, though? Dunaway, have you seen the movie?
Dunaway's in the movie.
He's in the movie.
It dawned on me when you and I were texting that of all the Halloween costumes I've done, I've never gone as Beetlejuice.
Oh, what a miss.
You got it set for this year?
Yeah. We got Otho down the hall. Y'all can
You go as the editor of Spotlight all the time.
I do that. I do that. And then my daughter had already found, I think we've already bought tickets to the Color Factory. I saw you did that as well.
Color Factory, very interesting. Definitely like a Instagram person's dream. AKA my wife.
Basically your wife.
It was fun, though. Those kind of things are so bizarre, but they're usually pretty fun.
Well,
but,
you know, your last post, it was something about pizza, and you said a lot of pizza this weekend, and you want more. I mean, how many times did you eat pizza this weekend?
Tried four different places.
Once a day?
It's kind of thing jump in, get a slice while you're walking around.
Yeah, that's true. You burn it off when you walk.
But at the Color Factory, they have the adult ball pit, right?
Yes, basically a giant ball pit of like these light blue balls, and you jump in, they take pictures and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's all kind of weird, goofy, embarrassing pictures that y'all have seen on Instagram.
But it's deep enough for you as a big man to take a deep dive into it. You did a head-first dive into it.
Yeah, head-first dive into it and disappear into it.
And he disappears. That's how deep that ball pit is.
It's pretty amazing. Excited about jumping in these balls.
At first, it's a Rockstar's weekend.
It is. It's that and the Statue of Liberty for me when I go up there. Okay, four downs brought to you by Vulcan Tires.
Four great locations, Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, and Trustful. Take your vehicle to Vulcan Tire and Automotive. They take care of your vehicle, so your vehicle takes care of you. For more information, VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
First down.
All right, news coming out about Bo Pelini heading to LSU to take over for Dave Aranda, who went on to Baylor. A lot of high-profile defensive coordinator changes this year in the SEC. Which SEC defense with a new coordinator will see the biggest improvement in year one? You got Arkansas, LSU, Ole Miss, and Vandy.
I mean, it's hard for Arkansas not to improve, right?
And Ole Miss.
Yeah, I mean, really both of them. I mean, LSU, I think, could improve marginally, but I'd have to say Arkansas.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Arkansas, too. I mean, what did Arkansas give up? 35 points a game this year?
I mean, total defense, they gave up 450 a game. Scoring defense, Arkansas gave up 36 a game. Both were dead last in the conference. It's got to be Arkansas.
Yeah, it's got to be Arkansas.
The biggest defensive coordinator.
And I like Barry Odom.
The biggest defensive coordinator move this year was Auburn keeping Kevin Steele. I think the biggest improvement will be another guy that stays is Pete Golding in Tuscaloosa. But the answer of your question of the new ones, I'm going to take Ole Miss.
Second down.
Nice group of coaches coming in, though. Barry Odom, Bo Pelini, DJ Durkin, and Ted Roof heading back into Vandy. All right, second down. ESPN listed all the college football head coaches they think are definitely on the hot seat heading into this next season. Only five Power 5 coaches on that list. So which one of these is fired first? Will Muschamp, South Carolina, Derek Mason at Vandy, Dave Doran at NC State, Clay Helton at USC, or Kevin Sumlin at Arizona?
I'm going to go Muschamp. They got another tough schedule, man. I was looking at it today. I mean, I got a brutal every year for them.
I got a feeling all five get it this year. All five of them.
Wow.
I will go Helton, though, just because I think he's got the highest profile, obviously, and he was the guy that was under pressure going into this year.
Well, with that quarterback room back, if they you know, lose to Alabama in the opener and don't get a lot of injuries and rallied like they did the last time.
I mean, they might be your Pac-12 favorite. I think Oregon will be your Pac-12 favorite, but they'll definitely be your Pac-12 South favorite.
I'm going to go with Brown. I'm going to say it's going to be Will Muschamp because I felt like he sort of whistled past the graveyard last year.
Third down.
All right, Raheem Mostert signed a new contract yesterday with the 49ers after his game against the Packers, but his contract prohibits him from doing any kind of extreme sports because he grew up as a huge surfer as a kid in Florida. So I ask you, what weird clause would a team have to put in your contract that could potentially hurt your career?
Well, first off, before you guys answer, can I say what a bad move by them to give him a contract? Nothing jinxes you for a big game than getting a big contract right before the
absolutely.
Big game. Wait till after the game.
Well, by standards, it was three years, $9 million.
Yeah,
he's been cut by every team in the NFL, so for him, it was pretty big.
But let's keep him hungry going into this game. That's what I say.
I don't know. I don't do a whole lot of extreme stuff. I mean, it'd have to be limiting.
Golf would hurt your back or something.
Yeah, maybe golf hurts my or certain things I eat.
I mean, honest to goodness. More money, more problems for me. You'd have to put the Terrence Cody clause in there. I'd have to have you'd have to put me on a specific weight I'll need to stay at because I get a little fatter and happier every year.
Bonuses,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Nothing for Lance.
I mean, I really don't know. Alcohol, maybe.
All right.
Maybe. Can you put me on a drink count?
Yeah.
A drink count. I'd hate to be, like in the baseball games where you hang the K's after every strikeout. I'd hate to be the person that hang up the martini glass or the wine glass.
No, you would hate it Saturday.
Do it every time just to make you feel bad.
It was Roger Clemens against the Brewers.
All right, an estimated $6.8 billion will be bet on the Super Bowl this weekend, according to the American Gaming Association that just put this report out. More than 1 in 10 adults will bet in some way on the Super Bowl. A lot of sportsbooks now taking prop bets. Actually, in person, they're taking prop bets. I know that hasn't been a thing that's happened before, including what color Gatorade will be dumped on the coach, Super Bowl MVP, that kind of stuff. If I said you had to put $1,000 down on any one prop bet in the Super Bowl, what would it be?
Oof. Gosh, I haven't looked at them all, but I saw today Mahomes MVP. I mean, that'd be a tough one not to go with.
I'll take over on the national anthem.
Is it Demi Lovato?
I don't even know.
Yeah, I believe it is.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is. Demi Lovato. She actually did a restart. Wasn't it her did a restart the other night on the Grammys?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She did.
Good for her.
Like she started in Tanya Harding and said, hold on, we got to start over.
I think I will take the over Pat Mahomes interceptions, which is probably a half. He hasn't thrown one this postseason.
That's four downs. Brought to you by Vulcan Tires. Four great locations.
Gardendale Hoover, moody and trustful. Winter weather in full effect. Is your car hesitant to start? Heat not working properly? Are you sliding on the road during rainy weather? These are the things they specialize in rectifying at Vulcan Tire and Automotive. For more information, VulcanTireAndAuto.com.
Super Bowl opening night last night. Media night kicking off the week. Festivities leading into the big game, which you'll hear right here on Jocks 94.5 on Sunday afternoon. Travis Kelce, George Kittle, a couple of big historic-like tight ends in this game. Travis Kelce at one time was a quarterback and transitioned to being a tight end. And when he was transitioning to being a tight end, he had certain role models that he looked at and how he wanted to play the tight end position. Here's TK.
Guys like Todd Heap, Heath Miller, obviously Tony Gonzalez, Yancey Gates, the guys that I was able to play while the tail end of their career was going on, and cherish those memories. But I think, I think those guys are really the guys that helped mold what the tight end position was supposed to be played like when I made the transition from quarterback to tight end.
Gates and Gonzalez are the two tight ends for me that sort of changed looking at tight ends, and then Jimmy Graham took it to a different level.
That's what it was. It was Antonio Gates, really. And Tony Gonzalez, obviously a great athlete that played basketball at Cal as well. But Jimmy Graham was kind of a different level athlete, and that's more Travis Kelce to me.
Do you think Tony Gonzalez is the best tight end of all time?
I think when it's all said and done, he will not be.
Because it's such a different position now.
I really think one of the guys playing in this game this weekend will end up being it, and I think it's going to be Travis Kelce.
Yeah, I think it's going to be George Kittle.
We just went left Twix, right Twix on that
right,
one really quick.
Right, we did. I do like both those guys a lot, but I think George Kittle, just his emergence just last year. Now, it's been weird in the postseason because, I guess they've run the ball 71% of the time, so they really haven't had to utilize George Kittle. But I think this could be a big, big Sunday for George Kittle.
I know you saw this, LT, since you bring that up. It was in the ESPN stats package we got overnight from ESPN Coverage Metrics using NFL Next Gen Stats, legality there. The San Francisco 49ers have a chance to make history this weekend that takes you back to 1974 or before, Brownie.
Is this Dolphin material?
Dolphin, Steelers, Cowboys, Packers material. They have thrown the ball 27 times in the postseason. That's all the 49ers have thrown it through two postseason games, 27 times. The lowest postseason NFL number of a team that won the Super Bowl was Miami in 1973. They threw it 32 times in winning three games.
Okay, look, if you don't have to throw it and you can run as effectively as they did against the Green Bay Packers, then that's what you're going to do. But Kyle Shanahan reminds me of a more likable Mike Martz and just kind of the unpredictability of how he's going to call a game.
You think we're
going
to run? We're going to throw it all over you.
I could see him go out, and I could see Garoppolo have 35 attempts.
Eight passes on the first drive, even.
I could see that happen.
You know, maybe Shanahan's biggest error of his career was not being dedicated enough to the run, though, right?
Or the Falcons would have won that Super Bowl.
I mean, if he had just run the ball a little bit more late in that game, there's no way New England has time to make that comeback.
73 Miami threw it 32 times. The next record is 72 Miami, still that great trio of backs with Mercury Morris, Jim Kick, and Larry Zonka. Miami threw it 40 times to win the championship in 72. 1971, I believe that was still a Craig Morton Dallas Cowboy team. Maybe it was Morton and Staubach. Dallas 51 times, third on the list. Terry Bradshaw's Pittsburgh Steeler team in 74, 52 times. And then the 66 Green Bay Packers Super Bowl I, 52 times.
So basically modern day football. You know, this has not happened.
Here's what I would love to see. How many times when New York and Eli Manning went from a 9-win team to winning a Super Bowl and having to play four postseason games. How many times he threw it?
What year was that? And I can tell you.
Oh.
But just think about what I just said, guys.
2013, I think.
Okay, I'll look it up.
If they throw less than 25 times, my math's correct here, they're going to be only behind the Dolphins of 73 and 72, ahead of the 71 Cowboys, 74 Steelers, and 66 Packers. Here in modern-day football, of throwing it less than almost any team that wins the Super Bowl in NFL history. And that's back to the cloud of dust days. That's an amazing, and 25 is a lot for them right now. So they got a good chance of making that list when it's all said and done right here in the 2019 season.
163 passes, Lance, for Eli Manning in 2011 when they won four postseason games.
They had the one extra game than any of these teams had to as a wild card team.
Now, and that includes 58 passes in the game at San Francisco in the NFC Championship game. He threw it 58 times, 32 of 58.
So they've basically thrown it 7.5 more times than San Francisco.
163 total passes for Eli Manning. It's a little different game now, boys.
All right, it's 9:06. You can start calling in now to jump in line to play a fun roundtable game for Thomas Rhett tickets. We'll do that in our next segment, the CenterPoint Road Tour. Thomas Rhett coming to town with special guest Cole Swindell, Hardy, Oak Mountain Amphitheater, July 16th, 7:30. All seats reserved. Tickets go on sale Friday, January 31st at 10 a.m. You can buy your tickets this Friday, LiveNation.com. These tickets not on the market yet. You can get in line to play the game right now. We'll do that coming up in about 10 minutes. I wanted to get to this, and you're a big Clayton Kershaw fan. Clayton Kershaw doesn't feel like the Astros have been apologetic enough, that they've shown no remorse in this whole scandal that has haunted Major League Baseball this offseason. To Dallas Keuchel's credit with the Atlanta Braves, he's the one former Astros that has said, "I'm sorry," multiple times, and he did it Friday with a release saying that when you're in the course of a season, you really never thought it would blow into this. And I'm paraphrasing here. You can read his official response online. But several times he says, "I'm sorry." And Clayton Kershaw and others do not believe the Astros have done enough to be remorseful of what went on.
Yeah, look, I like the remorse, and I like for him to be able to come out and say something like, you just wonder if guys like Correa and Altuve and Springer internally, if that organization said, look, just don't comment right now. Let's just see how this thing plays out.
I mean, your owner held a press conference where he publicly fired the manager and the GM, basically, right? Said Major League suspensions aren't enough. What would have been the problem with throwing the apology in there? And we apologize.
Yeah, as an organization, we didn't do things the right way.
I mean, you're admitting, by firing the guy, you're admitting we don't even debate whether or not Major League Baseball is right. We agree that they were correct, that we cheated. I mean, I'm going to fire my guy. I'm going to stand by him. So why would you not have apologized then?
Is it easier for Keuchel now that he's a Brave and not still in the Astros organization to be the first to do this?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, you've still got, you know, you've got 24 other guys in there that you're basically, you're coming out and making comments on their behalf.
But if I'm Keuchel, if I'm Keuchel, what was my role in it, though, you know?
Well, he was a pitcher.
That's what I'm saying.
He got run support.
He did get run support.
A lot of it.
Yeah. That's a great point, Lance, at home, certainly. But, you know, I wasn't wearing the buzzer. I wasn't listening for the beat of the trash can. You know, I'm just out there pitching, doing my job. Yeah, I'll leave it up. I guess what I'm saying is, did I benefit from it? Maybe, but I'm going to leave it up to the guys that actually participated in cheating.
Look, Kershaw could have pitched better, and the Dodgers had an opportunity to win Game 7 at home, but that's going to be really tough if Kershaw never wins a championship.
Right.
When you go back in back-to-back years, and again, I'll say this as a Dodger fan, they weren't going to beat the Red Sox, cheating or not, but I really believe they would have beaten the Astros in 17.
But to your point, Kershaw relies so much on the difference between his not overpowering fastball and his breaking pitches, and to have a heads up on what's coming is light and day against a guy like Kershaw. Keuchel said on Friday, "I think first and foremost, apologies should be in order for everyone on the team." And then he went on to apologize. I thought that was a good move by Dallas Keuchel of the Atlanta Braves.
I don't disagree. You know, I don't really, again, I didn't think that the Deflategate was nearly as big as some people, and I think we all agree with that, that it was on some levels kind of, I don't know, kind of ridiculous. But did Tom Brady not come out and apologize?
Well, I mean, he took a 4-game suspension. I can't remember if he apologized or not. But what's the apology going to do? Lance, does it make you feel better as a Dodgers fan?
No, it doesn't.
And I can't imagine it makes Kershaw feel better as a player.
For them as an organization to be a little remorseful, it sounds better.
I don't know what the schedule will hold. Will you guys, I mean, will they throw it? Them? I mean, is that the bold, unwritten baseball code? You don't think so? You don't think you hold a grudge that long?
Well, they've been talking about And I do apologize to Keuchel now with the White Sox. I didn't know he had moved on from the Braves. Hadn't been watching this offseason. I do know they're talking about throwing at Friars, the guy that blew the whistleblower.
Yeah. He's going to get thrown out, but you're not going to throw at Altuve or Springer or any of those guys you think cheated?
That would upset me a little bit.
Yeah.
Interact with us on Twitter at Jocks Roundtable.